And Catullus is our first topic tonight this week on Nights, one of Rome's ancient poets, one of the best-known poets from classical Rome. Lived, I think, over 2,000 years ago, but his influence extended as far as 20th century New Zealand. Now, Oxford University scholar Professor Stephen Harrison, who's a specialist in terms of the influence and the poetry of Catullus, is based at the moment at Canterbury University's Tees Museum. And the other day he gave a talk about the classical poet in Christchurch, and we've got Stephen on the line from there now. Kia ora, Stephen. Welcome to Nights.
Kia ora, Brian. Very nice to be on.
Lovely to have you on. Catullus, he lived before, what, around up to about 50 BC? Am I guessing right?
Yes, 50s BC, about the time of Julius Caesar. His father was a friend of Julius Caesar, and he mentioned Caesar in his poem, so that's the time.
Do we know much about the person behind the poetry?
Yeah, a bit. So like most of the Roman poets, he comes from a fairly elite background, is well-educated. We know that he travelled out on provincial service to what's now Turkey, to Bithynia, and he served on the staff of a provincial governor, which was a usual thing for rich young men to do. And he spent his time partly in Rome and partly in Verona, up in the north, and partly up on Lake Garda in Sirmione. It's a very beautiful place up there. So we do know a bit about him, a bit more than some other Roman poets, actually.
Did you come to Catullus through his poetry or through studying Latin?
Yes, well, I suppose a bit of both. I mean, I was lucky enough to be able to study Latin at school. And I think Catullus was the first poet I ever talked on. I gave a talk in my last year at school, which is quite a long time ago now.
You gave a talk on Catullus in your last year at school?
I did, yes.
In Latin?
It wasn't a very good talk. No, just in English. But
that's already quite impressive.
Beginning of a long relationship, which is still going on.
What was it about this man who'd written poetry 2,000 years ago that grabbed your heart?
I think it's just very immediate. He comes across as a very kind of genuine, present in the room kind of person, and he does appeal to a lot of people throughout history, and as you say, in modern New Zealand as well. He's a big poet of love. He's probably best known as a poet of love, and some of his love poems are very kind of moving and immediate. He was pretty popular in the 1960s because he appears as a kind of alternative youth poet. He says things like, all the old men can go and...
Yes, I think I know the one you're referring to, which I was thinking of. Evans, how much of that can I read out? Part of me would love to read the whole thing out.
There's lots of naughty
stuff. It's pretty saucy.
Yeah, so he is a poet of invective. He's not afraid to tell people what he thinks of them in the most colourful language. But he's also a very lyrical and beautiful poet of love and also of lament. There's the fantastic poem on his brother's tomb. His brother died somewhere out in the provinces, and apparently Catullus goes to visit his tomb and writes this rather moving poem about it, which was one of the ones that New Zealand poets have picked up.
Yes. Now, I think there's J.K. Baxter might have been influenced a bit in one of his poems,
yes.
I think, At the Grave of a War Hero.
Yes, which is a fantastic poem. I discovered, not being a Kiwi, I discovered Baxter quite late. I discovered him perhaps 10 or 12 years ago. And this really, I thought, was wonderful. So he turns this... So Catullus's brother died on some kind of provincial service. We don't know whether it was in the army or whatever. But Baxter turns this into an Anzac grave, which is very clever. And he begins by... I'll read you a bit of the poem, if you like. That's Baxter's poem.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, one fat nut from the macrocarpa tree that goes above the garage where you kept your bike and rabbit traps, I planted at the edge of your military slab. Not as a bribe to Deathwish Drang, the zombie in charge of this cemetery, but in hopes it might reach down to hell and split the rock and let some light in. So he transfers it to a modern cemetery. And at the end, we have, so Catullus's poem famously finishes, brother, hail and farewell, frater, ave, atque, vale, in Latin. And Baxter brilliantly turns this by saying, well, brother, the Wargraves Commission has put you in your place, right where you started from, perfectly adjusted, normalized in your concrete cabin till the last flag drops. Good luck, mate. Goodbye. So, hail and farewell, his version. And it's very, very local, very Kiwi, Wargraves Commission, good luck, mate.
Yeah.
But it's very true to the spirit of the original. And I think Catullus is a poet you can pick up easily because he is emotionally quite genuine. It's very recognisably human.
For you, are you moved more by the poetry in the original Latin?
Yes and no. And I mean, I think the feelings come across better in your own language because it's your language. But I'm also, I mean, one of the things about Catullus is that he's a great poet of feeling, but he's also a wonderful poet of musicality and learning in Latin. So the poems sound very beautiful in themselves. And that's something that obviously you need to know a little bit of Latin to appreciate fully. So, for example, that poem about the brother, I could read you the first four lines and you could see how it sounds. And I think he's very musical.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah. So this is talking about going to his brother's tomb. Multos per gentes et multa per aecura vectus, adveniras miseras, frater et inferias, ut te postre modonare munera mortis, et muta nequiquam allocore cinerem. So it has this very musical meter, but also lots of nice kind of echoes and sounds. Now, you can hear those, just like music, even if you don't know Latin. But if you know Latin, you can see how they relate to the sense of it and how they kind of map the poem. So, yes, I think he's very appreciable in translation, more than many Latin poets.
What's the challenge? If you're trying to translate this into English, then what are the how do you decide what to keep and what to let go?
It's difficult. I think the musical effects are very difficult to reproduce because they depend on certain sounds in the Latin. But the best modern poets can do that. They can turn it into their own musical effects. So in the case of James Baxter's poem, he has his own musicality, the zombie in charge of this cemetery, so his own kind of interesting rhythm. So I think all good poets can do that. I mean, Baxter actually did two versions of this poem. He did an early one in his teens, or when he was an undergraduate, which is much more old-fashioned. But the later one that I read a bit of is much more him. It's much more his kind of personal rhythms. So I think a good poet, and Baxter's, I think, a really great poet, can track that in his or her own way.
I was looking at the poem because it did catch my eye, and I can't read out all of it, but I did love just how straightforward it is, at least the English translation that I'm reading. This is Aurelius and Furius. I could pick it up at this translation I've got here. You who think since my poems are delicate, I'm less than chaste. It's well known that a poet who is devoted need not be upstanding in his verses. It's clear that my lines are charming, witty. Then what of it if they're a tad soft, a bit shameless at times? Mind you, I'm not talking about healthy boys, but hairy old geezers who can't get it up by standard methods. I think that just is on the line of what I can say.
Yes, the rest of the poem is quite colourful.
Yeah, it just gets more and more colourful, yeah.
Yeah, but it makes an interesting point that because Catullus is writing poems which come across as quite sort of sentimental. I mean, there's the poem on his girlfriend's, the death of his girlfriend Sparrow, which is quite famous, been imitated by many poets.
Yeah.
And
Lesbia's Sweet Bird, yeah.
That's right. And there are poems about kisses for boys and girls and so on. And what Catullus is saying in that poem to Furius and Aurelius you just mentioned is, don't think that because I write these quite sentimental, sort of fluffy poems, that I'm not a proper man. and I'll show you I'm a proper man in very physical ways.
Which is where we can't. That's where we can't go. We can't go. That's but you know, you can look it up. Look it up. That's now.
Catullus poem 16. Yes, my son gave me a T-shirt with that on.
Did he?
Not the naughty words, but the number.
Oh, you must have been a proud dad when you got that.
Certainly am. Yes. So there's this kind of soft, sentimental side, the love for the brother, the love for the girlfriend, but there's also quite a strong invective side, and he can punch, he can be quite critical both of his friends and indeed of his girlfriend when they break up. So there's one poem where he sort of sends her a Dear John, and that's again to Furius and Aurelius, who seem to play this role as his friends. And he says, a very interesting last part of the poem. He says, in translation, "Report these brief words to my girl, an unwelcome message. Let her farewell with her lectures that she holds in her embrace hundreds of a time, loving none of them truly, but always for all of them rupturing their groins. And let her not look back as before for my love, which through her fault has fallen away, like a flower on the edge of a field after it has been touched by the passing plough." So there you get this kind of really tough invective that she's given hernias. She's got 300 lovers and she's given them all hernias, which is a pretty strong picture. And then you get this much softer picture that his love is like the flower on the edge of a field after being cut down by a passing plough. Now, Freud did not invent the language of sexual symbolism, and flower is normally a girl language in Roman and Greek poetry. But here it's Catullus. He's comparing himself to the female figure, and he's comparing his girlfriend to the passing plough, which is much more kind of phallic and male. So he's actually bending the gender expectations here, and that's one thing that he's very good at. And that may be one reason why he appeals to the modern world, where gender fluidity is a much bigger issue than it has been in other periods. So I think he's got lots of rich things which come across to modern readers.
What about the links with C.K. Stead? Because that was the other New Zealand poet you mentioned.
Yeah. Well, Carl Stead, I've never met him, but we've had extensive email correspondence. He's been really helpful. I mean, I've written a couple of things, and he's been... I'm very appreciative of his help. So he, over time, really over 30 years or more, he has done a lot of imitation of Catullus, and really very effective. And he's a very witty as well as a very learned poet. And I think he responds to that wit in Catullus. So the poem I mentioned about the death of the girlfriend, Sparrow, we've got Stead's version, which begins, I think I could probably say this on radio, "Death, you clever bugger, who would have credited you with such finesse? Your shadow passed over me and took instead Clodia's white pigeon." So he translates the sparrow in the original version into a white pigeon, which is a much more recognisable modern bird as a pet, I suppose.
I mean, sparrows might have been treasured by the Romans, but here in New Zealand and probably in England too, sparrows are kind of, I don't know, sort of slightly feathered vermin, depending on your point of view. They're not native to New Zealand, you see.
Right, introduced like so many species, yes. But Baxter, in his version, turns it into a budgie. So he says, "Pyrrha's bright budgie, who would say, pretty fellow, for bits of cake from her hand is now silent in the underworld." And then he goes on, lovely detail, "We buried him beside the rhubarb, ceremoniously in a box that once held winkle pickers. Death, you've got a hard gullet." So once the domestic rhubarb, but also the winkle pickers, very kind of 1960s, 70s, pointed shoes that people used to wear. So it's that contemporary detail that both of them are able to bring in that makes it living for contemporary readers. And I think it goes on. I mean, there are other, Anna Jackson, who's a lecturer in English at the Victoria University in Wellington, she has done really brilliant recent versions which turn the tables in gender terms.
Oh, well, that's just as well, yeah.
Yeah, so she actually rewrites Catullus's poems from the point of view of the girlfriend, Lesbia or Clodia, as she's sometimes called. And that mirrors the sort of feminist turn in classical scholarship, and I think works very well. And that's one of her collections, I, Clodia. And the other one, she's done a really brilliant thing, I think, which is to... It's called Catullus for Children, and there she rewrites Catullus through the lens of young children. She had young children at the time. So the poem about the dead bird, we get her daughter's kind of slightly interesting version of it. I can read you a little bit of that.
Yes, we've probably got about a minute. Yes,
okay.
Go ahead.
A couple of lines. I found a couple of some feathers from a bird. I pretended it was a real bird, but we saw it was a pretend bird. It looked like a real bird. It was a pretend bird. So we put it in my bread bin. So you have a thing which is a sort of dead bird, like Catullus, but it's narrated exactly like a child in that kind of staccato and odd way. So he's really got something to give to modern New Zealand poets, and that includes people who are still writing. Carl Stead's still writing, aged 87. Nana Jackson is certainly writing great work at the moment. So he's been a real plus for New Zealand literature, I think.
Stephen, thank you so much for joining us. How much, very briefly, how much longer are you in the country?
I've got another 3 weeks, sadly, but I've had a really great time here as an Erskine Fellow at the University of Canterbury. It's been absolutely lovely. And as you say, the weather is much better here than it is up north.
Thank you, Stephen, and enjoy the rest of your stay here.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Thanks
for having me on.
Bye-bye. That's Stephen Harrison. He's an Oxford University scholar, professor there, specialist in Catullus. Catullus, by the way, spelled C-A-T-U-L-L-U-S.